97.5, The Fanatic.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. On this afternoon, your interim host, Tyrone Johnson here. Tom producing, Jen Scordo in there. Yes, Alvord, even though his name should clearly be Alvord, he is in there producing Alvord. But we got a lot of stuff to get to today. And let me tell you, I got to be honest with you. I got some news right before the show that I'm not going to talk about on the air that I feel like a weight has been lifted off of me, and now I'm really ready to hit the day hard, and let's get it going today, this afternoon. And we start how we always start with the word of the day, and the word of the day is diversion, because there's this cliche in which we say sports are our diversion, and they help us get away from the heaviness of life. That is something that people say about sports as to why they play sports. It's the reason why people do a lot of things. That's why they watch reality TV, they say. It's the reason why they go to movies. And sports are one of the alleged diversions in life that help us. And we all feel better today than we did yesterday because the Phillies actually won a baseball game. And we'll get into that in just a moment. But I'm starting to believe that in this area, I can't speak for the entire country, but in this area, at least, I don't know if sports are the diversion that we claim that they are. The reason I say this is there is a lot of toxic energy around our sports environment, and it makes me wonder sometimes if it's good for our mental health. Again, we go off the backdrop of what many people have said about, let's say, the Super Bowl. You've heard me say this many times. There are people who have children and are married, and some even have grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and they said the best thing that ever happened to them was the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. And try not to judge, but you start to think like, wow, that's not a diversion. If the Eagles winning the Super Bowl is the best thing to ever happen in your life, that's not a diversion. Sports have become not a hobby, but the job. And not even a job, but like your family. And not even like your family. It's almost like you worship the game. And we can't underestimate the fact that the NFL is the first thing in thousands of years to beat church. Church was undefeated from like the year 32 to 1992. And since 1992, like, the NFL beats church. That doesn't feel like a diversion to me. And you look at the Phillies, you're looking at the people, the angst from the Sixers, the Flyers fans are upset. I'm starting to wonder if in the Philadelphia area, are sports really a diversion? And part of what made me bring this up was the Phillies fall behind, and you see the venom on social media, but venom in social media is not real life. People say preposterous things on social media. They lie, they say cruel things, they say untrue things, but when there's enough people doing it, at some point it's legitimate. And after the game, when they come back and win, and which everyone should just go, okay, they broke the losing streak. That's a good thing. They get an off day today. Then they play a weekend series, and then they get another off day on Monday that allows you to rest your pitching. That gives Joe Girardi hopefully some flexibility with the bullpen. Schwarber got some hits. Maybe this is something to build on. And instead you got, well, who cares? They're just going to lose the next series. And that very well may be true. But if we're always going to be in this state of negativity when it comes to our pro sports teams, is it still a diversion, or are sports the main thing for a lot of people? Not everybody's the, quote, hardcore fan. But is sports still the diversion that we pretend that it is. Because more and more as time goes on, I feel like the sports for many fans has become this all-consuming thing that they're living and breathing all the time. And they're dealing with their work stress and their family stress and their life stress. And then they deal with their Philadelphia sports teams, and that's nothing but stress. Do sports really make us feel better? And are they really, in Philadelphia, the diversion we really claim that they are? Because as time goes on, I'm starting to just wonder, because I like to be happy sometimes. And it feels like many sports fans almost don't want to be happy a lot of times. And I don't know where this comes from. Now, one more note about the game. Matt gave me this little, I wasn't about Aaron Nola for just one second. That's a problem. Happy they won. That's a problem. His career now, in the sixth inning, so far this year, in the sixth inning, he has a 13.5 ERA in the sixth and a 6.75 ERA in the seventh. Meanwhile, in the first inning, 1.64, he hasn't given up any runs, earned runs in the second inning, 2.45 in the third, 3.5 in the fourth you can still live with, 3.6 in the fifth still live with, 13.5, 6.75, and then he's had one game where he has a terrible ERA in the ninth. So in the first, second, and third innings, Nola, 1.36 ERA. Fourth, fifth, and sixth, 6.36. Seventh, eighth, and ninth, 6.79 ERA. That part's a problem. And we thought that maybe that would get fixed this year, and that part isn't. But you get the point. So before we get into some of the many things we'll have to do today, Tom, diversion, or sports in Philadelphia, I'm not talking about in Minnesota or anywhere else, are they the diversion that people claim that they are?
No, not at all. Sports are supposed to be a diversion, as you said, an escape from reality, an escape from what's going on in your life, your personal life, the issues you're dealing with. That's what sports is supposed to be. And it is absolutely not the case here in Philadelphia. We have two championships since 1983. So that's pretty much, 1% of the time that we are happy with sports here in Philadelphia. So, yes, it all makes sense. The dictionary definition makes sense of why sports should be a diversion. But here in Philadelphia, more times than not, it absolutely is not a diversion.
And Jennifer?
I think it can be.
What? No. I'm not asking if it can be. I'm asking if it is. If it is. If it is.
It is in my life.
No. See, you keep dodging.
I know, I'm trying to dodge. It's exactly what I'm trying to do.
Can't dodge.
I'm dodging it. If you start to get frustrated, turn it off and walk away.
No, but, that's not what people do.
But I don't believe that the majority of Philadelphians can do that. And it's taken me a long time and many Therapy Thursdays to get to that point.
To get to that point.
Yes.
And it's just, I just want to know from you, overall, the good thing about Lane Johnson, the bad thing about Ben Simmons is, and also Brandon Brooks before him, was mental health is much more talked about now than it was in the past. And that's fantastic. Lane Johnson did a great, great thing. So did Brandon Brooks before. Ben Simmons did an abusive and dangerous thing. But the point is, it still brought more attention to the subject. And that's good, because when you're dealing with people at work, for example, who are dealing with mental health issues, it doesn't just affect that particular person. Those mental health issues end up affecting everyone that comes in contact with that person. That's just the reality of the situation. So when we're dealing with this many people, and we had the city councilman on a couple weeks ago who said the murder rate goes down when the Eagles win, the murder rate goes up when the Eagles lose. The murder rate.
It's insane.
Just, that's not a diversion. If it's that important, it's not a diversion. So I just want to ask everybody out there, because of partially because of the roller coaster ride that has been this Philly season, and many other things, but I'm trying to, the most current thing is this Philly season. There were high expectations, and now the Eagles have sky-high expectations. And boy, if they start 0-2, how will people react to that? I don't expect that. I think they're a playoff team. I'm right there with people, but there's some that have jumped all the way to Super Bowl. If they don't get what they want, that's going to affect their relationships with their families, with their workplace, with a lot of things. And at that point, it's no longer a diversion. It is now one of your main tenets of your existence. Hence why when people go to other cities, they feel the need to not say hello to people. They say go Birds. They don't say hi. We talked about if they go to Baltimore to watch the Ravens and the Steelers, they have to wear their Eagles jerseys to show their identity.
Yeah, it's not a diversion at that point.
At that point, it's not a diversion. So in addition to, one, how do you keep that under control? Two, for in your life, in the net, look at the whole thing. Don't look at the gross. You got to look at the net. See, the Super Bowl, that's $1 billion. But how much? That's a hypothetical $1 billion. The Super Bowl, that's the payoff. That's hitting a lotto ticket. But here's the thing. If you play the lottery once every time it's $150, $300 million, and let's say you spend $20 at a time, that means that to win that $150, $300 million, you might have spent $100, $200, $500 in your whole life to win $250 million. Easy trade-off, easy investment. In this particular case, though, with our sports teams, we spend $1 billion to win $100 million. We're in the whole $900 million. Win the whole $900 million.
It's not great odds there.
Not great odds there. And that's where I want to know. In the net, I want everybody to look inside themselves. We always have to look inside ourselves. I think that's something that's important. Do sports help your mental health? Or in Philadelphia, do sports hurt your mental health? 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. We have a lot more things we will get to. The NBA Finals start tonight. We'll talk about if we ever get the Sixers to that point. We have the 20th anniversary of the debut of The Wire. We're going to talk about the greatest TV shows of all time. We'll talk to Beowulf at 4:30. Julian Lurie got power now. He's got an office. He's got a title. He broke the story. We'll talk to him at 4:30 about that because there's obviously Eagles mini camp. And we'll get into a WNBA question as well. So we have about 10 hours of show that we're going to pack into 4 hours today and hopefully have a lot of fun doing it. 610-632-0975. Your interim host, Tyrone Johnson, here with you until 6 on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Right now, I'm very excited because it's time for What's Brewing with Jen. Let's see what you have today.
There's nothing controversial happening here with these three stories.
All right.
We'll start in California today. A woman recently went on Craigslist to buy a couch. She gets the couch home. She found some money shoved in the cushions.
All right.
She found $36,000 shoved in the cushions.
Uh-huh.
Now listen, this woman, she is a better woman than I. She immediately called the couch's seller and returned the money. And this is what she said. This was why she did it. I was just telling my son, come. I was screaming, look at all this money. I need to call this guy. God has been kind to me and my children. They're all alive and well. I have three beautiful grandchildren. What could I ever ask for?
$36,000.
That's exactly what you can ask for.
In cash, sitting in your hands.
So this
why is she's better than I am.
Yeah, now what I would do is, $36,000, you said?
Yep.
I would go to her and say, wow, I have $26,000 in your couch, and I would keep 10 grand.
I would have said you have $6,000 in your couch. You kept 30 grand.
Yeah.
She's going to be excited. You hear $6,000. That's
worse,
awesome.
I'm worse than both of you.
You just would have kept it?
Yeah, I just would have pocketed
I'd give some
the money.
Of it back.
I wouldn't. That's I would put it in my account, and I start investing it, so I wouldn't. I probably wouldn't spend it in case he came calling back and, like, sued me or something. That way I'd have it.
Cash. How you going to prove it?
Well, yeah, you're right, but who knows?
Yeah, that's more sketchy on him.
Yeah, what you know about that much cash? And then the IRS is going to be checking on him. Nah, that's money he didn't claim.
Exactly.
Nobody claims that much cash.
So that's
point. Then why would you give him $26,000?
I give a certain amount back.
All right.
Like, listen, I don't like getting money I didn't earn. But I feel like she's blocking her own blessing.
But it fell in your lap, literally. You sat on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give back some. It'd be the same way of the kind of dirty cop I would be. Well, I couldn't be a cop. If I made a big bust, I'd be like, wow, 99 kilos. That other kilo, I got to find a way through the back channels to get funneled back for the cash. But I'd make sure that 99 got off the streets.
Goodness.
That's the kind of, so I kind of look at it like I still did 99% of a good job.
I'm glad you know that you could never
round up.
Officer.
That's 100. There you go.
Right. 99. Who's going to quibble? That's one of the biggest busted ever.
That's true.
Look at Officer Johnson over there. Oh, doing a great job.
Officer Johnson.
Did a fantastic
I like it.
Job over there.
It has a nice ring to it.
I'm telling on everybody.
All right. And this story came thanks to Tom Alvord sitting over here.
Wow.
So edible tape has been invented to stop your burrito from falling apart. I think this is brilliant. Four engineering students from Johns Hopkins were brainstorming the perfect invention, and then they actually came up with it. And it all happened because one of the girls in that group was eating a burrito and the tortilla fell apart and everything fell into her lap.
Yeah.
And they said, this is a problem and we can fix it. We're engineering students at Johns Hopkins. And they went and they did it. It's called Tasty Tape.
Oh.
And it's vegan and cruelty free.
Well, that part
how about
I cared
that?
Less about. But
well, I mean, it's a good thing.
Well, yeah, that's
not a
good.
Bad thing.
Now,
right?
Yes. No, it's a good thing. That's very good. That's mm-hmm. very cool. And that's very necessary. Question.
Okay.
Burrito. Let's say you get a large burrito, not a little burrito.
Okay.
Do you cut it in half and eat from the center, basically, or do you eat through all that tortilla on the end? How do you handle your burrito?
I do the tortilla on the end and just go the whole
nope,
thing.
Not me.
Me neither.
Right? I got to cut it, and I start in the middle and work my bay basically out on both
sometimes
sides.
Sometimes when you cut it, though, it's overstuffed and stuff starts falling out, and then you're losing
that's all right.
ingredients.
That's all right, because I'm cutting it in a spot where it'll hold stuff. Once I get it upright,
then you're good.
And then I'll have the fork right. for the thing. But I don't want to eat through all that tortilla on the end.
It's just one bad bite, pretty much.
You throw that away?
No.
Like you get to the end?
No. Once I start in the middle, the sauce and everything has worked its way down.
Gotcha.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I understand. I cut for a different reason, though.
Well, what do you cut?
I can't eat those big things. I have to cut it in half. I got a little mouth, so I have to take smaller bites, and I can't eat the whole thing anyway. So I like to when I know that I can't finish a whole meal, I have to cut it in half and take
and
that
save
perfect,
the rest.
But the perfect half. Like gotcha. If I'm eating a burger, I'm not going
to
just
save 25%. You have to save 50%,
well,
or you can't do it.
I can't bite into it. I have to have it cut perfectly. You see what I'm saying?
So take one bite, you won't save it, is what you're saying.
I would cut it to where it was perfect and then eat the rest of it.
Okay.
Is that weird?
A little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah. Yes.
A little bit. Oh, all right.
Your stomach doesn't know that it was a perfect
yes,
cut.
But my brain knows I like it to be
and
perfect.
And the brain does control the stomach, I feel like.
Okay, OC.
I didn't say I wasn't.
Oh, you better not say you're not. Yeah.
All right, and we'll end with this one. A possum walked into a Brooklyn bar. Sounds like a joke.
Yeah, it's a start of a joke.
Uh-huh.
Start of a joke. It really happened. So a woman named Sarah Fulton was enjoying a night out with her friends. I don't know if I should say the bar or not, because I don't know how the possum ended up in there, and I don't want any disparaging, whatever. Anyway,
yeah.
So she's in there with a bunch of friends, and they see a possum run across the floor of the bar, and it was a pretty busy bar. First, they thought it was a dog or a rat. I guess that could be completely true in New York, but turns out it was a possum. People started freaking out and, like, jumping up on their chairs. Well, this woman, Sarah Fulton, who's from Alaska and has battled things like, you know, real wildlife and nature, mm-hmm. just went, grabbed the possum by like, it you know, its high neck or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just took it outside and threw it in the street.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
I wouldn't either.
I'm not doing
They're,
that.
They have rabies, right?
I don't know.
Probably.
Possums?
I mean, I don't know if all of them do, but
she said she didn't even think twice about it, right? Not all of them, because she is from Alaska and she's had to battle moose and black bears in her own backyard. She escorted the possum outside, threw it into the street, went back in, and she got cheered from the bar, and then she had a whole bunch of shots lined up.
Oh,
from people
cool.
saying thank you.
Yeah, I would do that.
How did the possum get in? How did nobody see
in.
A possum?
Just walked in.
Just walked
possums
in.
Are
just
huge.
In. Just walked in.
Possums can get to
and
be gigantic.
I'm drinking. All right, I don't care about that so possum over there, man. What's up? Hey, bartender, focus. Get the possum. Drink. It's empty. Tequila club. Let's
oh
go.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's go.
I don't. I really don't understand how nobody saw the possum walk in.
And then Booney piles in as we wrap up.
Good. I always love to hear what Booty has to say.
The woman said to the possum, you look just like your Tinder profile picture.
Oh, Booty.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Oh, wow. All right.
Booty.
That's really good, actually.
Right.
I like that.
All right. Well, listen, we have to end the hour on that note. Justin, Greg, you'll be first in the 4 o'clock hour, 610-632-0975, to join them. And we'll also talk to Bo Wolf at 4:30. About Julian Lurie and also the Eagles, but he was the one who had it first that thumbs up or thumbs down. And also in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll talk about the 20th anniversary of The Wire and what is, in your opinion, the greatest television show of all time. 610-632-0975. We'll be back here on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
On the line right now, from The Athletic, covers the Eagles, does a fantastic job, and also broke the story about Julian Lurie, is Mr. Bo Wolf on the Comcast Business Hotline. Thanks so much for the time, Bo. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, Julian Lurie, we kind of knew that this was going to happen at some point. We heard about you and others talked about the Senior Bowl and how he was there. He's been around a lot more, but now you uncover that he now has an official title and he's now has a formal role in the organization. How significant is this move? Because some fans are saying, of course he does, and other ones have some, they're a little bit nervous about the future, the long-term future.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's significant even if it was expected. You know, there's a situation here where, you know, Jeffrey Lurie has been bringing along Julian Lurie his entire life as an Eagles fan and knowing everything that goes on behind the scenes and, like, the decision-making processes that are involved. And Jeffrey Lurie said at the owners' meetings, you know, a couple months ago, if Julian wants to be the owner of the team at some point, you know, he can be the owner of the team. And so I think it's notable that, like, this next step has been formalized. And, you know, from my understanding, Julian has an office space in NovaCare Complex that started a couple months ago. And, you know, he has been meeting with people on the business side to better understand what goes on that side of the building. I think he sort of has a little bit more to learn on that side than he does on the football side, only because as he's like a kid growing up and you know, in his 20s, he's obviously more involved or more interested in learning about the football stuff. So, you know, I think it's like, you know, anybody's going to have some trepidation about, you know, grooming like a 20-year-old kid or 27-year-old kid to be the future owner of the team. But I feel like, you know, knowing that that's the inevitability anyway, it is probably good that he's in the building learning these things and also that, like, the other people in the building have a chance to interact with him. And from my understanding, you know, he's been people have been not impressed, I would say, but people have been, you know, impressed to some degree in terms of the kinds of questions he's asking. He's not, you know, coming in and trying to give answers or anything. It does seem like he's doing the work.
Yeah, so the conventional way for ownership many times in the past was you go make your fortune doing some other business, You then buy the football team, and inevitably, because of the how lucrative the NFL is, you end up making that your main business. Jerry Jones being one of the biggest examples. Now, with this whole generation of before, a car dealer used to literally be able to make enough money to buy an NFL right. team. Obviously, that's those days are long over.
I think you and I are out of the owning pro sports team business, unfortunately.
Yes, for sure. So now we have another generation where you see it in Dallas, obviously. Now you're seeing it here. Would it be, and just this is just your opinion before we get back to the Eagles and more specifics, would it be, is it better to be in the organization like he is right now, or would it be better for him to be out there doing some sort of startup, managing people, and then taking those skills and coming into the NFL the way others have in previous generations?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer, and I feel like it depends probably more on the individual than the situation itself. Like, I feel like if you are someone who has made your fortune in a different business, you know, who's to say that what worked there is going to work in the NFL? And so I think there's an argument that it probably is for the best for someone like Julian Lurie to grow up in the business of football and understanding what goes on in terms of the decision-making processes and stuff like that. I think it just depends so much more on the individual than the specific business background. And obviously it makes sense, like Jeffrey Lurie buys the team in the early 90s and the business of the NFL has exploded. And so there's no reason for him to be looking to get out. You know, he's obviously made like a crazy percent profit on that investment in the first place. So it would make sense that Julian gets to then inherit those, those reins.
It makes a lot of sense. Now here's another question I have for you. He's the title Business and Football Operations Strategy. And
yeah, that's a funny one.
Yeah, like that part we'll just go right by. But in this particular offseason, Jeff Lurie kind of downplayed his day-to-day involvement and kind of said, oh, I've never been involved in the draft or anything except for, you know, this awesome right tackle, Lane Johnson. I don't know if you've heard of our great left tackle, Mailata, but other than that, I'm never really involved. And I don't think that was true at all, even though that's how he tried to make it out. Now that he has an official title, going forward, I know you said he's asking questions. How much do you think he will be much more visible in the immediate future now that he's officially an Eagles and employee?
Yeah, I think that's the intention, is that he will be more visible. Now I don't think he's going to be, you know, marching into the draft room and calling the shots right away. I think it's going to take some time before, before he's comfortable, you know, trying to enforce those kinds of decisions. But, I mean, you're right that, like, you know, Jeffrey's explanation of his involvement in the draft room was pretty laughable. I mean, it takes a pretty low opinion of your audience to think that they're going to believe something like that. But my understanding is that Julian is here. Is like, this is the beginning of the process, of the path to him taking over eventually. And I think it's probably fair to read it as the more that Julian is involved, the less that means that Jeffrey is involved. I think it's sort of this sliding scale where Jeffrey is maybe beginning to start to be a little bit less involved in the day-to-day operations. Maybe he has some other things going on and is paving the way for Julian to then step in underneath.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, talking to Bo Wolf from The Athletic, covers the Eagles, does a fantastic job. You should be reading his stuff every opportunity you get. Shifting over to the football side, obviously you do have the first formal team workouts. And the expectations right now, you live here, you know, you're hearing about it, are really sky high. Anywhere from they should beat Dallas to win the division to some columnists have written about the Super Bowl, especially once the Bradberry deal was done and everyone liked the draft and A.J. Brown, et cetera. You're aware of all that. How do you look at the team right now, pre-training camp, as they have their first real workouts and they're hanging out at the facility?
Yeah, I think they should feel like they had a great offseason. And I feel like they should feel like they've had a great, you know, 2 years in the offseason in terms of starting from last year's draft when you got, you know, Devontae Smith and Landon Dickerson and Milton Williams. I view them as, in my mind, the favorites to win the NFC East. And I know that the Cowboys still have the best quarterback in the division. I think that's inarguable. But I feel like the Eagles have the best rest of the roster. And if you just look at, you know, the Cowboys finished, what, 2 games ahead of the Eagles last year, and they've probably just gotten worse this offseason, whereas the Eagles have upgraded really all over the place. And, it bothers me, but it gives me that sinking feeling as an Eagles observer, knowing that when we heap praise on them in the offseason, sometimes that means they're going to take a step back. It sort of reminds me of after the Super Bowl, we were all talking about, wow, this roster looks even better than last year's roster, that they could be even better than the team that won the Super Bowl. And obviously that didn't come to play. I think one of the differences here is that what Howie Roseman has done is he hasn't really invested in like older players to long-term contracts like he did back then and some of the trappings of that post-Super Bowl downturn. I mean, A.J. Brown is turning 26 this month. He's a young guy who's going to be a part of this team for a long time. Even the older players who they did sign, like James Bradbury, who's not even that old, it's only a one-year deal. You know, Hassan Reddick for a free agent, high-profile player is fairly young for that type of player. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Eagles should feel like they enter the season as, playoffs or bust. I think if they don't make the playoffs, that would be a significant disappointment.
Wow, and that's actually where I'm at. Playoffs are bust, and then you mentioned the quarterback. So tell me if I'm crazy, because many times I'm dead wrong. You mentioned the quarterback spot, and I think that the improvement of Jalen Hurts will determine just is it playoffs and right there with Dallas. That's if he gets slightly better. If he gets significantly better, then I think they can kind of win a division. I don't want to say comfortably, but they'll be like they'll definitely win a division. And if he gets much, much better, then who knows how good this team could possibly be because the weapons and how good that offensive line is and the defense at least should be better. Is that a fair way to look at it?
I think that's fair. I look at it slightly differently only because I think that like Jalen Hurts' level of play this year has less effect on how good the Eagles are going to be in 2022 than it does on whether he's going to be the quarterback in 2023. Like, I think if Jalen Hurts is just as good as he was last year, like no improvement, same player, I think the Eagles could still very much win the division. Given all of the improvements they made around him, you know, adding A.J. Brown, adding some depth on the offensive line and the defense should go from, it was 25th in the league last year. If they're not a top half of the league defense, given all the investments they made there, I think that would be a huge disappointment. So I think Jalen Hurts can be like just treading water and this team is still a playoff team and maybe a division champion. If he takes that leap that you're talking about, that real leap, then yes, this team is probably a Super Bowl contender. Now, I don't think it's likely he's going to make that crazy leap into like a top eight quarterback. But I think what this tells us, and the Eagles have talked about this, like improving the roster allows them to have the best evaluation possible of what Jalen Hurts can be. And so if Jalen Hurts goes out and given all of the improvements around him doesn't take a leap and is just the same type of player, then yeah, I think Howie Roseman will be eager to find a new franchise quarterback next offseason.
Wow, that has me excited, though. I'm going to trust you on that about winning the division, even if he doesn't take that big leap. The last thing I want to ask you about is the other biggest question mark, at least among sports radio people and fans that we talk to, and that's Gannon, the defensive coordinator. People we know were pleasantly surprised and impressed with Sirianni's ability to change his offense on the fly from what he wanted to do to what would work and find a way to get this team in the playoffs. Most people are pretty much at this point on board with him. But on the defensive side, especially in a city like Philadelphia where we pride ourselves on defense for whatever reason, he left a lot to be desired. He has better players this year. And he still got head coaching interviews this offseason, but that's neither here nor there. How much pressure's on him to be much better? And I know how the numbers look, but we saw when they played a good quarterback, it did not go well. How much pressure on Gannon this year for him to have the defense look better now that he has better personnel?
I think there's a lot of pressure. I think he's in a very similar spot to Jalen Hurts, where the Eagles have spent this offseason giving him everything he should need in order for this to be a good defensive unit, just like they gave Jalen Hurts everything he should need for the offense to be very good. I mean, they've upgraded at every level. You talk about adding Hassan Reddick to a pass rush that was the second worst in the league last year, and adding Jordan Davis up front. You talk about N'Kobe Dean and Kaiser White at linebacker to fortify what was a pretty bad linebacking group last year, and then adding James Bradbury to pair with Darius Slay. Obviously, that's an upgrade on Steven Nelson. I think that if this defense is not a top, 12 or maybe even top 15, if you want to get a little bit loose, like if they're not a top half of the league defense, I think that reflects really poorly on Jonathan Gannon because he should have everything he needs, and we hear that it's going to be a little bit more multiple this year. He wants to mix in those even odd and more odd fronts with, you know, Jordan Davis playing that zero technique and Hassan Redick standing up. But I think that Jordan or Jonathan Gannon is very much under fire this year. Now, my understanding is in the organization, they love Jonathan Gannon. They have high hopes for him. The players love Jonathan Gannon. I think there's a reason he got those head coaching interviews because he has these really good interpersonal skills. But, like, the proof is going to be in the pudding. He has everything he needs, he should need this year, talent-wise. If they're not good, then that's not good for him.
Well, really appreciate the time, Bo. Great job with the getting the scoop on the Julian Lurie. And at least we'll find out about Julian in the long-term future. But the short-term future, I think we agree, looks pretty bright for this team.
I think I agree. Thanks for having me, Tom.
All right. Thanks so much, Bo. That was Bo Wolf from The Athletic on the Comcast Business Hotline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.